Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Manny Patinkin plays a sleuth in the midst of an ocean liner murder in Deaths and Other Details. That's Hulu's first original scripted voyage of 2024, coming January 16th. Creators, executive producers, and showrunners Heidi Cole McAdams and Mike Weiss join me next in an internet radio exclusive from Los Angeles. The Ultimate Transition is the focus of Going Home, Great American Pure Flix's drama series, now in its second season. Creator and showrunner Dan Merchant returns in our next half hour. Also ahead, three series dominate last night's Golden Globe Awards, Primetime Emmys Round 1, LG gets CES 2024 underway, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and more than 40 other great podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Our opening hour is brought to you by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. 43 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. It's bright, it's breezy, and we're happy to have you with us wherever you are for the program all about TV's current and future. Wonderful bunch of guests coming your way over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in wherever you are with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio. You can also get involved with our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Heidi Cole McAdams and Mike Weiss from Death and Details on Hulu. They'll join me from Los Angeles after these news notes. LG expects to bring a smart home hub to its smart TV set soon. That's the big development company executives revealed this morning at CES 2024, the annual Consumer Electronics Mega Show. It opened today in Las Vegas. The hub, allowing smart TV set consumers to monitor and trigger various appliances and features of their home or apartment, will power up through LG's Thin IQ platform using generative artificial intelligence, or generative AI. ThinIQ also will accept applications and features from outside developers. Later this year, Google will deploy its Google Home abilities into LG Smart TV sets through the webOS operating system. William Cho, LG Electronics' chief executive, promised at the company's CES event that AI will be instituted in what he calls an accountable, responsible, safe, and secure manner. Samsung, Sony, and other smart TV players will have CES 24 events later today. More than 130,000 people and 4,000 exhibitors are expected to be at CES 2024, which continues through this weekend. A trio of television series captured a stack of Golden Globe Awards last night. HBO's final season of Succession picked up the Globes for Best Drama Series, Best Actor, that is Kieran Culkin, and Best Actress, Sarah Snook, I believe. There we go. Yes, Sarah Snook, absolutely. And it also captured Best Supporting Actor for Matthew McPhailen, Best Supporting Actor in overall television. Also, The Bear on FX was honored for Best Comedy Series, Comedy Actor Jeremy Allen White, and Best Actress in a Comedy, Ayo Idibus. And, in addition, Beat from Netflix hit its own trifecta, Best Miniseries for Made-for-TV Movie, Best Miniseries Actor and Actress. We're talking about Steven Yeun and Ali Wong. HBO and Netflix tied for the most TV awards with 4 each. FX earned 3. I'll have more to say about the Golden Globes, which turned out to be a disaster on television, not just because of the opening monologue, and much more. We'll have that for you in our next half hour, and we want to hear from you by phone or chat room, too. We're a week away from last year's Primetime Emmy Awards getting their big live ceremony showcase on Fox. All the awards not getting discussed next Monday night were given out this past weekend in non-live ceremonies. HBO leads the service deal with 18 Emmys at this point, followed by Netflix with 16 and FX with 10. HBO video game adapted series The Last of Us tops the individual programs with 8 Emmys, with FX docuseries Welcome to Reshom second with 5. The show honors some of the show individual honors. Weird, the Al Yankovic story from Roku, won the Best Made for TV Movie category, and Jeopardy won for Best Game Show. We will bring you news note quickies at the top of the next hour. And now joining us from Los Angeles, an internet radio exclusive, the executive producers, creators, and showrunners of the new Hulu series, their first scripted series of 2024, Death Note Details, premiering on January 16th. We welcome in Heidi Cole McAdams and Mike Weiss. Heidi and Mike, Happy New Year to you. Great to have you aboard.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having us. Mike,
yes.
You there?
And Heidi, okay. Yep.
Yes.
So Heidi, I'll start with you. I understand that both of you are big fans of classic mysteries like Agatha Christie, Arthur Conan Doyle, etc., and that's what sort of prompted both of you to come together and write this.
Yeah, I mean, we are friends first. We're not a writing team. We've you know, worked together in a few different writers' rooms and wanted to find something together. And I had never written a murder mystery before, but I've read a lot of them, and I love them. And Mike has worked on a bunch of murder mysteries, and we thought this would be fun. And here we are.
Mike, pick it up from there.
Why
the interesting classic mystery?
Heidi and I have a lot of different interests that kind of overlap in this one category, which is the, you know, the world's greatest detective, you know, kind of strain of murder mysteries and crime fiction. And it just it's just a genre that allows you to have a lot of fun, right? There are a lot of rules and a lot of tropes. And within those tropes, there's a lot of room for reinvention, right? You've got colorful characters, you know, all often, you know, in the case of the type of show that we did, trapped in a luxurious location. All of these colorful characters are carrying secrets with them onto the ship, but only one of them is the killer. And once the initial murder takes place, you know, the game is afoot. I mean, it's an incredibly fun genre to get to play around in, and it was incredibly fun to work on it with my friend, like Heidi said, in the first thing that we've ever written together professionally. So
Heidi, taking on this genre, especially for people who are big fans of, let's say, the Hercule Poirot movies or television series on PBS, how do you reinvent this kind of story?
Yeah, I mean, we started with a character. We started with this young woman, Imogen, who is different from any, you know, she's very much a woman of our time. She is, she doesn't like to follow the rules. She thinks differently from other people. She's a little bit adrift when we first meet her because she suffered a big trauma when she was young. And we told the whole story through her eyes, through her point of view, as she becomes the prime suspect in this murder mystery in the beginning, but ultimately ends up blossoming into a detective, a new kind of detective, hopefully, that people will fall in love with.
And Mike, this story has a lot of plot twists because it's a locked room mystery, takes place on an ocean liner. That's, of course, en route to go from one place to another. And then you have this detective who's trying to figure out the suspects, figure out the who done it and why done it and so forth. And at the same time, you have this other character that Heidi just mentioned that sort of comes across as the prime suspect. And she's played by Violet Beam, by the way, who, if you haven't seen the trailer for this, comes off as somebody who likes to sort of give her own panache, if you will, to the crime.
Yeah. Yeah, she brings a – she kind of brings a punk rock energy onto this luxurious cruise ship is how we talked about it, you know? In terms of the plot twist, you know, where do you even begin? We believe that every episode of television should be exciting, right? I think that in this moment of peak TV, maybe we're exiting this moment of peak TV, but I think that in this moment, a lot of writers occasionally would get trapped by trying to tell an 8-hour long movie. Heidi and I never wanted to do that. We come from a network TV background where every single episode has to have a reason for being. And so for us, because of the genre that we're in, that meant that if every episode was going to have its own identity and its own rhythm and its own reason for a studio to spend millions of dollars on it, there had to be a cool plot twist that furthered the murder mystery. There are 10 episodes, and so when you add them up, yeah, there's a lot of twists. But we're very proud of the number of twists that we were able to come up with our incredibly talented writers in our writers' room who we worked with to build the season-long story.
The first two episodes of Death and Other Details premieres on Hulu on January 16th, and a new episode every week, and then the finale comes up in March. We are talking with the executive producers, the creators, the key writers, and the showrunners of this series, and that's Heidi Cole McAdams and Mike Weiss. They both join us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Albaum with you from the other side of the U.S. of A. That's Nueva York, 43 degrees at the top of the hour. Let's hear from you. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. This is the first of three episodes we're doing this week. We're going to be back with you in less than 48 hours on Wednesday. And joining us, our lead guests on Wednesday are going to be both the executive producer and the star of a new Western series on INSP. If you watch them regularly, you know they've done a number of Western anthology series. But on Thursday, they're going to be launching the first ever Western series that they've done featuring a lead character. It's called The Tall Tales of Jim Bridges. You'll meet executive producer Paul Epstein and the star of this new series, Rib Hillis. That's coming your way on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Plus, we'll have more news from CES 2024 and other things, too. So be with us. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. So, Heidi, how did Mandy Patinkin get into this?
We created this character named Rufus Coatsworth, who's the world's greatest detective. And when we started talking about who to consider for this role and Mandy's name came up, all three of us, me, Mike, and our director, Mark Webb, lit up at the idea because we've all been fans of Mandy for years. So we sent him the script and he read the script along with his wife and his son. They all read it together, and they all loved it. They loved that it was, you know, fun, that it was an escape, that it was a game. We had a meeting with him, and from that first meeting, it was like, yep, you're Rufus. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So when Mandy, Mike, came to you and Heidi to start preparing and researching for this show, what did you tell him about how to play a world's greatest detective? For example, when people, I think, see the trailer, start seeing the episode, they might think Hercule Poirot, who's been played by the likes of Albert Finney, Peter Ustinov, David Suchet, and so forth. Did you have him watch those shows? Did you say, Mandy, just create your own way?
Not even for a second. Mandy is the best and is unbelievably skilled, and he does incredibly hard work to prepare for each role that he does. He certainly worked hard getting his head around the character's perspective, his skills, also trying to figure out how to play him as a flawed detective, which is something that we wanted to emphasize from the beginning, which is, you know, in the scripts. He worked on an accent. The character that created was Stryver from Brighton. He did not have necessarily a polished London accent. Mandy worked really hard on crafting that. And then when we were on set, you know, Mark Webb, who Heidi mentioned, who's our pilot director and a phenomenal collaborator, Mark had one note that he gave to Mandy occasionally, but it was a note that he also gave to other actors along the way. And the note was, have fun. And Mandy really, I think, like, was able to embody that, right? How do you keep the murder story grounded? How do you keep all of the emotional connections with the characters on board the ship grounded? How do you build a season-long connection with Imogen and keep that grounded? But how do you also make it really, like, capital F fun? And that was something that Mandy was able to do, you know, effortlessly, that part. And it was a joy to watch on set.
And Heidi, how did you find Violet? And what kind of ground rules did you give her for how to shape her character?
So we had created this character of Imogen, who was, like Mike said, a little bit of a punk rock spirit set in this luxurious, over-the-top world. And we were having a hard time finding her because we had both were friends. We're not a writing team. We'd written this for the first time together, but it was – we had written this character that, like, was kind of living in both of our heads, but we had a hard time articulating exactly what we were looking for. We talked about a lot of women, a lot of people read for the role, and then Violet auditioned. Not only, we found out later that she auditioned while she had COVID with her mother reading the other part on her cell phone while she recorded herself reading the role. But we didn't know that at the time. All we know is that this one audition came through and both of us looked at it individually and we called each other and we said, that's her. That's Imogen. She just embodies the spirit of this woman without even trying. A woman who is smart and who thinks about the world differently than other people, but who also has an edginess, an edge to her that makes her, I mean, she's kind of a cool girl, is the truth. Cool girl, but then when you really peel her back, you can feel what she's feeling, and she has like a depth of just a depth of sadness, I think, that also really defines who Imogen is.
Now, both of you, as you mentioned earlier, have had experience writing, show running, or producing various series. For example, I'll start with you on this one, Mike, because some of your credits include In Plain Sight, great show on USA Network, The Mentalist, long-running hit on CBS, Chicago PD still on, of course, on NBC, Code Black. And Heidi, you did, among other things, State of Affairs. You're the 100, which is a show that we covered. It was on the CW, I believe. Mike, I'll start with you on this. How did your work on other shows help you to do this program?
Oh, I mean, it's the best training for being a showrunner yourself is to, if you're lucky enough to work for great showrunners, you literally write down a list of things that you want to do like your great bosses are doing, and then you just keep that list in your pocket and you consult it every day. So, the list of shows that you just, enumerated that I've worked on, the one thing that unites all of them is that there were amazing, super capable, smart, funny, ambitious, showrunners behind every one of those shows. And so, all you can do is try to model their behavior, be collaborative, be someone who's always looking for someone else's idea to make the thing better, always give credit when someone else comes up with something that's better or sharper or, more useful than, what you were bringing to the table. Delegate, which means hiring amazing people who you trust, try to get a lot of protein in your diet. It's a really intense job, and I think that the truth is the best version of it is someone who's as collaborative and open to working with a team as possible. I don't know, Heidi, do you agree with that? Rambled. Does that sound right?
No, I completely agree with that, but I also think there's another thing, which is that we were both very fortunate to have started working in TV at the right time when, for example, you mentioned State of Affairs, and there was also a show called Intelligence that I worked on, both as a staff writer, which is, kind of an entry-level job into a writer's room, but I was fortunate enough to work for showrunners who let me be a part of the whole process. Work in the writer's room to figure out the story, write the script, go on set, watch and supervise the set during the production of it, and then sit in the edit room and see how a show comes together in the edit room. And going through that whole process front to bottom on an episode of TV teaches you a lot about how to make TV. And we were really lucky, I think, both Mike and I, to have worked on shows while production and writer's rooms were happening more concurrently, so that we were able to see all of the steps that go into making a TV show, so that when we started making our own, we knew what we were doing at least a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons that the writers went on strike. I'm not sure if you were aware of that last year. There was a brief writer's strike in our industry. And one of the real things that writers were fighting for was the ability to keep writers on through all of production, and ideally, if you're lucky, into post-production during a series. It's a kind of training, like Heidi said, it's an invaluable kind of training that unfortunately has been going away for various, pragmatic production reasons as streaming series have gotten both more ambitious, which requires longer prep time, And also as seasons have gotten shorter and shorter, both of which basically mean that the only person who's on for the entirety of a season of streaming television is often the creator or the showrunner, which denies younger writers and younger producers the ability to gain all of this knowledge that Heidi and I were lucky enough to get. It's a real problem, and hopefully something that, you know, we helped to address, you know, in this new agreement that the writers were able to carve out with the studios.
Mm-hmm. Heidi, what was the filming like? Did you rope an actual ocean liner to do it all there, or did you have to do like exterior ocean liner shots and then everything else in the studio?
We were really lucky with this show. We shot all over the world. We shot in Los Angeles. We shot on the Queen Mary, which is a luxury ocean liner similar to the SS Varuna, which is our fictional boat. We went to Malta. We shot in Canada. We shot in the mountains. We shot on the water. We were really fortunate to have the support of ABC Signature and Hulu, who wanted our show to really feel like a travelogue and to take you on a vacation. And we feel like they helped us deliver.
And the vacation begins on January 16th. The first two episodes of a 10-episode series, Death and Other Details, starring Mandy Patinkin, comes your way on Hulu, available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. We've got the creators, the executive producers, key writers, and the showrunners with us this half hour live on Smart TV Televised. We're talking about Heidi Cole McAdams and Mike Weiss, both from Los Angeles. Simon Abbaum with you live from New Weber, York, 43 degrees near the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you in our remaining minutes with these two. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Smart TV Televised, the third of our three episodes this week, we'll introduce you to somebody who's got a very interesting business. It's called Binge Networks. What does it do? It sells shows, syndication-like, to Smart TV networks, as well as Smart TV multi-channel bundles, whether it's Pluto TV or Zumo or Tubi, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, they may be developing a whole new field, the idea of bundle syndication. We'll talk to the head of Binge Networks, Bonnie Britterow. That's coming your way Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. She'll be among our guests that day right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. One thing that's very interesting about your show, Heidi, I'll come to you on this because you have a particular portion to play here. You not only had a very diverse cast, you had one of your cast members, a woman named Angela Zhao, actually write a script with you.
Yes. She was in our writer's room. So what happened is we shot the pilot of our show well before we knew if we were going to be able to make the series. So we shot the pilot first. We cast everyone. Angela was a part of our cast. She's phenomenal in the role of Teddy that she plays. And she also, on set, was just very helpful, talking about story, talking about she speaks both Cantonese and Mandarin, and we have characters who speak both, and she was engaged in kind of like helping us with that. And she spoke like a writer as well as an actor. And then we found out that she was a writer. And so we very kind of secretly got a hold of her script and read it, and it turned out to be one of the better scripts, pilot, you know, spec scripts that either of us had ever read. And so we called her when we were allowed to hire writers, and we said, will you join our staff? And she started crying and then said yes. She'd been wanting to, you know, she came out here to do both, to write and to act, and so it became her first writing job. She was in the writer's room. She was a huge contributor, and the two of us wrote episode 8 together. So pretty exciting for both Mike and I to be able to have given Angela that opportunity, and she just totally shined in the role.
Was Angela, by the way, the exception, or did you have other writers in the writer's room who were doing their first scripts for television, Mike? That's one for you.
That's a great question. I'm trying to think. We had a couple. We had Paul. We had a couple of writers. Yeah. I was gonna. Of course, Nick had written previously. But yeah, I mean, like Heidi said, it is like one of the biggest joys in doing this, and there are a lot. When you get to create a show and see it through as showrunner, but giving people opportunities. For them to do, you know, something that they've wanted to do in a lot of cases, like their whole lives, and they're really skilled, and it's a very, you know, competitive profession, but helping people get started on their careers and get some of those foundational jobs that they can build a whole career off of is I mean, it's the best. Who wouldn't want to do that? And yeah, we had a couple of newer writers on the show who just totally killed it. They wrote great drafts. They had great ideas in the writer's room. We had a blast. It was really hard. It's really hard coming up with, like we were talking about earlier, you know, 9 or 10 twists to drive a 10-episode long murder mystery. You need all the help you can get, and we were super lucky to have the awesome writing staff that we did.
You know, for both of you, it's very interesting that you have a very diverse writing team, a very diverse acting group, and many of these folks are new faces on either side of the camera. So what's it like to sort of bring this unique group together to put a production like this together?
It's a dream.
I
mean, yeah, it's what both of us have been working toward our whole careers. And we felt pretty strongly that we wanted to find, you know, we have some obviously incredibly recognizable faces, but we wanted to find people who could embody the characters that we'd written and not all of them necessarily be, you know, super well known in previous roles. And we got really lucky. We worked with these fantastic casting directors, Tiffany Canfield and Adam Caldwell, who helped us just like amass this team of, I don't know, superheroes. Like we really love, we feel so fortunate, this cast. They're just incredibly talented, each and every one of them. And we're really excited for people to fall for them and for, you know, for them to turn into stars.
This series, originally, when it was announced back in 2022, was going to be called Career Opportunities in Murder and Mayhem. Does that mean that there may be a second, that if this thing, if the show works, there may be a second season with this detective or maybe another detective?
The idea is for this to be an ongoing series. So right out of the gate in the pilot, you know, you have Rufus Coatsworth, played by Mandy Patinkin, established as a guy who once was considered the world's greatest detective. By the end of season one, there is a new team that emerges of, you know, a Scooby Squad of crime-solving sleuths who are going to work together to solve, you know, impossible murders. I'm trying to be coy because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to spoil anything. There are a lot of characters in this show, not
hopefully,
all of whom.
Hopefully, yeah. People watch our show, and if they do, we have more stories to tell.
Exactly. Thank you.
So before you both go, quick round. What's your favorite mystery tale that inspired you in part to a specific Agatha Christie story or Conan Doyle story, whatever to that inspires you?
I love And Then There Were None. That's my fave.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, I love all of the, I'm actually, I mean, on some level, I'm even maybe more of a crime fiction guy. I mean, I love Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler sleuth stories in particular. And, you know, kind of that kind of slightly heightened writing mixed with, you know, our shared love of Agatha Christie type storytelling. Hopefully that's, you know, evident on screen when people tune in to watch this show.
Death and Other Details. First two episodes come your way on January 16th. That is a week from tomorrow on Hulu, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices and multi-channel bundles too. You can get, by the way, the first two episodes on that premiere date and then a weekly episode after that until the finish in March. Remember, if you want more details online, go to Hulu.com, H-U-L-U, Hulu.com. Again, it's Death and Other Details begins a week from tomorrow, January 16th. Heidi Kolmick-Adams, Mike Weiss, thank you both very much for coming on. Good luck to you and all your crew on the show. Hopefully what kicks off next week, beginning of a great run.
Thank you so much.
Bye. You're very, very welcome, Heidi and Mike. Take care. Enjoy the week. Heidi Kolmick-Adams, Mike Weiss, joining us live from Los Angeles here on Tomorrow Be Televised. We'll be back with more of our program, but first some words from our sponsor, Sun and Swell. If you don't know about them, let me tell you, Sun and Swell is the first online grocery store with a fine, great line of healthy, great-tasting foods that come to you in plastic-free, compostable packaging. We're talking about rolled oats, trail mix, apple pie bars, energy bites, banana chips, mango, nuts. They've gotten 1,000 five-star reviews on one of the websites. And every item, no matter what you buy, is 100% vegan, gluten-free, and free of added preservatives or ingredients. So if you're looking for a more planet-friendly pantry, shop Sun and Swell. And you get 20% off site-wide when you go to sunandswellfoods.com and use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. That's 20% off your entire order when you use the promo code TELEVISE, T-E-L-E-V-I-S-E-D, at sunandswellfoods.com. You are listening to Tomorrow We Televise. We are the program all about TV's current and future. Great to have you with us on a Monday afternoon, first of three episodes we're doing this week. Remember, in addition to this program, you can also catch me on Wednesday mornings on Sports News Wire. It's the daily sports news information program on Sports Grid Network, which is available on smart TV sets, smart devices, Amazon Freevee, and many multi-channel bundles, including Local Now. The show is on 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, and this week I'll probably be talking with Craig and the crew about tonight's college football national championship game, Michigan versus Washington, ESPN, and the MegaCast, and we'll find out how the viewership did. Also, we'll have some CES 2024 developments pertaining to sports betting and other things as well, and a whole lot more. That's Sports News Wire, Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Sports Grid Network. When we come back, someone we brought you on this program 2 years ago is back with the second season of a very unique drama called Going Home on Great American Pure Fix. Dan Merchant joins me from Portland, Oregon, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you're a daytime drama fan, Soaps and Review is a must audio show for you on Blog Talk Radio. Check it out today, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Get the latest on The Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful, General Hospital, now 60 years great and going, and a whole lot more. That's the Soaps and Review program today, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best BTR always comes your way 24/7 on YouTube. Welcome back to our second 30 minutes, this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Amber with you live from Nueva York. And if you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We're going to bring Dan Merchant on from Portland, Oregon in a moment, so pardon me for a second. We're just going to get him on, and as soon as we do, we'll come right back. Just about 2 years ago, we introduced you to a creator and showrunner named Dan Merchant. At the time, he was working on a comedy with Dave Coulet of Full House fame opposite Bob Saget. It was called Live Plus Local, about the hijinks at a Christian radio station. The program was put together by PureFlix, a subscription service that was put together by Sony at the time. Since then, not only has PureFlix gotten a new owner, namely Great American Family, a few months ago, but Dan has moved on to be doing a series that's gotten great acclaim. It's called Going Home. It stars a person that you might know from a little thing called Northern Exposure, Cynthia Geary, twice up for an Emmy for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Series, and it's all about the world of hospice care. Well, on Friday, Going Home started its second season. And joining us live in an internet radio exclusive from Portland, Oregon, we welcome back to the program Dan Merchant. Dan, great to have you.
Thank you, Simon. It's nice to be back with you.
So how did Going Home come about?
Well, I think it hatched during the pandemic. Sony, I have a relationship with the folks at Sony Television, and they had let me know about their partnership with PureFlix, which they've gone from a majority partner to a minority partner, but they were looking for shows. And I wanted to come up with a mainstream show, and I thought during the pandemic when death was front and center, hey, why not try and go sell a show about life and death during a worldwide pandemic? So that was the highest degree of difficulty of a show I could think of, ha-ha, and stumbled into a really beautiful, amazing show that became Going Home. And so it's a really, it's a tender show that confronts all the things that are important to life and all the things that we think about kind of from our deathbed or when confronted with end of life. It really helps us to try and understand how we are living and are we on the path that we want to be and just reminds us of things we don't want to be reminded of, which is our mortality, but in a sweet and humorous and beautiful human kind of package, fronted by Cynthia Geary, as you mentioned, who is just absolutely wonderful as the anchor to our show.
When you're doing a program like this that deals with, and I called this in the teaser of today's episode, the ultimate transition, going from
right.
life on Earth to life, the next level, wherever that is, how do you try to make it something that people can deal with, people can confront, and be willing to talk about it, to deal with it, to look at an episode and then really ponder what you're talking about afterward?
Well, the big surprise to me was everyone is confronting it and has confronted it or will soon confront it through family members, whatever. I mean, it was very unusual. I accidentally made the most relatable show that I've ever created. And, you know, we had crew people and actors and people who read, you know, read for parts, you know, would all have a story they would tell. Oh, when I lost my aunt. Oh, this reminds me of this. This really touched me about this when my grandfather passed. Everyone knows the story because they've already lived it. We just don't talk about it very much. So to answer your question, I think the idea is to try and convince the viewer that you will handle this topic with thoughtfulness and compassion and care, and therefore it's safe to enter into our story with you. And that's the other thing about story, about TV. You can get as involved as you want to. Do you know what I mean? It's not a lecture. It's not a sermon. It's an entertaining show with characters, and you get caught up in the details of the characters. And, of course, you're likely to relate to various characters. You know, we have different guests come through, and they have different life circumstances. And the show, in a clever way, I think, is really a detective show in disguise. And that is this. Charlie Copeland, the head hospice nurse, when she enters the room of a hospice client and their family members, her job is to figure out what does the person who's dying need and what do members of her family need? Because sometimes the person who's about to pass is completely at peace with death. They lived a good full life and they're fine with it. It's the family that can't let go or has a hurt that needs to be unburdened or something. So that's Charlie's job. What is it that they need from me? And that makes for a really interesting show because it's always different and everybody's stories are different. And so it quickly becomes a show about forgiveness, reconciliation, you know, redemption, apologies, restoration of relationships long since fractured. And everybody can relate to all that. And so I think that the way you do it is it's a TV show. It's an entertaining show. It's got really interesting characters, and that draws you in. And then before you know it, I think you find how relatable the prospects of the story are.
Before you started both seasons, the one currently and the first one, did you and your writers and Cynthia, did you go to hospices? Did Cynthia follow hospice nurses or doctors on the rounds?
Yeah. I mean, the show originated with my wife, Kara Merchant, who's one of the writers, and I kind of recalling our experiences with loved ones and their hospice care. And the first thing that we stuck on was, hey, do you ever notice how the hospice nurses that we engaged with always seemed to know what to say? They always knew the right thing to say. And I think it's because, as we found out with our research later, that hospice nurses are a special breed of nurse where they're comfortable with death. They're comfortable with this space that most of us have experience with, but very sporadically, you know, lost a grandparent when we're 8, a parent when we're 30, you know, whatever. And it's 22 years between. They're doing it day in, day out. So they've got this great expertise and I think are gifted in that regard. So we started with recalling those experiences. And then in the writer's room, we added a third writer, Matt Michelatos, and we talked about all of our collective experiences in hospice. And then, yes, we did go to a hospice of Spokane where we shoot the show in Spokane, Washington, and did do a kind of a walk around with some nurses, and we interviewed several of them and kind of heard their stories. And most of the stories in Going Home are inspired or lent details from the actual true stories that we've heard from hospice nurses. And we also had them read the scripts and double check us to make sure that it felt true, because we really wanted to honor the hospice nurses, because they played such an important role with the passings of loved ones. And so it was really important to us to get it right. And so that research was really great. And then prior to shooting season one, Cynthia did get a chance to visit the Hospice of Spokane and spend time with hospice nurses there and kind of ask questions, kind of pick up little details and things. But yeah, it'll feel true to hospice nurses and to folks who have had loved ones go through hospice, because that was really important for us to get that right and to really honor those nurses.
Going Home premiered its second season this past Friday on Great American Pure Flix, with subscription service available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. Episode 2 is this coming Friday, January 12th. And we're speaking with Dan Merchant, the creator and showrunner of the program, which, as I said, is part of Great American Pure Flix. He is making a second appearance on this program. He was first on 2 years ago when he was doing another show for that same service called Live Plus Local with Dave Coulet of Full House fame opposite Bob Saget. Dan joins us from Portland, Oregon this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Albon with you live from the other side of the nation. That is New Haven, York. 43 degrees at the bottom of the hour. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on our next episode on Wednesday, special edition, 3 p.m. East, New Pacific, we'll introduce you to a new series premiering this Thursday on INSP, a network that has been doing some very interesting Western anthology original series, and now they're doing their first Western show with an ongoing character. It's called The Tall Tales of Jim Bridges. You will meet the executive producer, Paul Epstein, and Bridges himself, the actor, Rib Hillis. That's all coming your way Wednesday, 3 p.m. East, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. This is the first time Cynthia Geary has really been in the public eye for a very, very long time, ever since, you know, she made it big, as I mentioned, with Northern. I believe she was the character in Love with John Cullum, the Broadway star,
yeah,
and also TV star, who also was nominated for his role in that series. He also later became one of the judges on, or lawyers on Law & Order and Law & Order Special Victims Unit. How did you find Cynthia, and what had her get back into the swing of doing a series?
Yeah, no, a lot of people love Cynthia from Northern Exposure, and like you acknowledged, the Emmy nominations were further proof of just what an actual, you know, talent she is. And she did a few movies. She took some time off and raised her daughters, and you know, like I said, we're shooting up in Washington State, and which is where they shot Northern Exposure, and Cynthia was doing a play in Seattle when we were getting around to casting the show, and we were looking at different folks to go out to. And we thought, hey, you know, Cynthia Geary, you know, we all loved her from Northern Exposure. Let's send her a script and kind of see what she thinks. And it was really interesting, because one of the characteristics of the character Charlie that she plays is that she runs like a marathon runner. She'll get out and run to work each day. And that's kind of her spiritual meditation place, and one of the ways that the character copes with, you know, the intensity of a hospice center where people do pass on a regular basis. So she has these very methodical processes, including running, you know, running to work. And so when Cynthia mentioned, you know, she read the scripts, loved them, and she and I were having a chat, and she's like, oh, well, I run every morning with my dog, Charlie. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, the character's name's Charlie, and she goes running every morning. And as you know, that's a hard thing. Actors will put on their special skills. Hey, I ride horseback. I can play hockey. I'm a runner. And sometimes they are, and, you know, sometimes they're not. But she actually was and looks great as a runner. So she's a legit runner. So that was a neat little serendipity. But she just killed it. Her audition was so genuine and so incredible and so heartfelt. And the fact that at the time we cast her, she was doing a two-person play that ran for 80 minutes. It's like, oh, okay, so she can handle copious amounts of dialogue and knock them back out, because we shoot the show in a week. It's a lot of pages per day. And in season one particularly, Cynthia's in virtually every scene. So she had to carry the show. And that's a big ask. You're asking a lot from an actor considering how emotional some of the scenes can be. So she was very impressive with how dedicated she was, and just her talents is unimpeachable. And then as a person, she's just delightful and is a perfect ambassador for this show. And she just became Charlie. So it was really, it's been amazing to work with Cynthia. And she's such a leader, you know, on the set. We've got another terrific veteran, young woman named Cozy Zuhlsdorf, who was in Dolphin's Tale and has kind of been a Disney kid who's grown up. And she's a wonderful kind of comic relief character called Janie on there. And Chris Wheel, another veteran actor, plays in season two as well. So he gets a lot of screen time with Cynthia, and just a parade of amazing guest stars that all get to do big scenes with Cynthia. So she's really the anchor to the show. She really brings it to life. And, you know, there's a reason everybody remembers her from Northern Exposure, because she's great at that character. Well, now she's great at this. She's a grown woman who's really great at a really complex, messy, interesting, inspiring part. And I just can't wait for people to see going home and see, oh, see, I always liked her. I always knew she was good. I mean, that's sort of the reaction we get from everybody.
Let's talk about those guest stars, because I think people are going to be very, very delightfully shocked at who you've gotten for this season. You've gotten Karen Allen. Many people know her from Starman and especially Raiders of the Lost Ark with Harrison Ford. You've got Gloria Rubin, always a luminous actress. You've got Mel Harris. Remember her from 30-something. You've got Ellen Travolta, Charles in Charge. George Newbern, I remember him from Bull, TNT's first original series back in the 80s, early 90s. He also did Law & Order SVU. He was also in a show that we covered on this program called Granite Flats from BYU TV. And that's just some of the folks that are involved this year. That's a pretty, you know, AAA plus list roster of guest stars.
Thank you. No, we were thrilled. And what we were rewarded with and affirmed again is that good actors like to act. And what's wonderful about Going Home is it's an actor's showcase. There's not a lot of fluff. But, you know, there's a lot of funny stuff. There's a lot of warm, sweet human stuff, but there's not a lot of nonsense. It's we're telling these stories and we dive in. So when the actors look at these scripts, the ones that care about it, who really wanted, they're not just looking for a payday, but they want to do a really nice piece of work. We attracted, I mean, you know, Gloria Rubin's an Emmy winner. Everybody else you mentioned has got 30, 40, 50 year careers for a reason. They're very talented people. And to put them in scenes with Cynthia Geary, it's amazing. I mean, I got to direct I directed four of the episodes of season two, along with our first AD, Jared Briley, who directed one, and one of our editors, Jason McKee, who also directed one. So I was there every day and directed four of them. And to set these actors loose in a powerful scene together was just remarkable. And, you know, season two kicks off with a two-parter that features Gloria Rubin and George Newbern. Father of the Bride is the other thing people will know him from. And in fact, you mentioned Bull, which is great because Christopher Wheel played opposite George. He plays Alec on Going Home. So it's a reunion of those guys are both in the same episode, even though they don't do a scene together. But it's a great reference to TNT's first drama, Bull. So nice kudos to you for pulling that one out. But it's really great. Gloria and George were remarkable together. It's a very powerful storyline. George plays an oncologist, a cancer surgeon who can't save his own wife as she's dying from cancer. Now, she is fine. She's come to peace. She's made her peace and come to terms with the fact that she's going to shuffle off this mortal coil. But it's the doctor who's used to playing God every day who can't get his brain around it. It's like, I can't lose you. There's a joke in the show where, when this is a little sense of the humor we do have, George says to Gloria's character, I can't lose you. And she says, well, death must have come up in medical school. And George has to swallow hard and go, no, and actually it didn't. But it's an interesting point that it's like, you got to come to terms with it. And just to have those two talented actors navigating those kinds of scenes, it's really engaging. It's really entertaining. And, you know, the thing that people might not understand about going home is it's going to be a very entertaining hour. Some of the topics are heavy, and as I've seen comments on the internet, oh, you'll cry, but it's a good cry. So the show is cathartic, it's positive, it's hopeful, it's honest, it pulls no punches about talking about the hard things in life. And I feel like, as I mentioned before, one of the things that prevents us from having to confront our own mortality and think about death is that, well, that forces us to then go, well, what am I doing with the days that I do have? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And I feel like coming off the pandemic, you know, the great, you know, transition in the workforce, there's a lot of people that thought about that during this time and went, you know, I don't even like this job. Why am I spending all my time doing this? I'm going to go do something else. So I feel like going home is a little bit of a reflection of what's going on in the culture too, where we are taking a second to stop and think about what we're doing with our days and is it the right thing? And where are my relationships? How am I doing with the people in my life? And are there things that are on my side of the street that I need to clean up? And those are the kinds of things that are gently dramatized in going home.
In a moment, we'll talk with Dan about two unusual aspects of this series, including an original album of songs from the program that is coming out later this month. Dan Merchant is with us from Portland, Oregon. He is the creator and showrunner and director as well of Going Home, now playing its second season on Great American Pure Fix. That's a subscription on-demand service available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. So I'm now back with you live from New Web, New York. 43 degrees, getting near the top of this hour. Coming up shortly, we'll have our classic trivia question. Stay tuned. It's our second week we're offering the question, and you could be winning 7 great prizes, including the 2024 American Express pocket calendar if you know the correct answer and get it in by email. So stay tuned for that. Dan, in this set of episodes, there is an organization that's mentioned and actually is very integral to some of the plots. It's called Grief Share. Is that an actual organization? And
yeah.
How does it get into a lot of these episodes?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Yeah, so Grief Share is an actual parachurch nonprofit organization that offers people help navigating grief. They've created a very excellent curriculum, basically, and a series of videos and workbooks, and they're designed to work in small groups, often housed in churches. And after my father passed, actually, when we were shooting season one of the show, he passed during the show, so it was a little bit of life imitating art for me there. I did seek out Grief Share. And it was very helpful in sort of organizing a lot of the things that you go through, the feelings and the emotions and the memories, and just it can be a lot. And the thing that's beautiful about Grief Share is they kind of help coach you through it, and we dramatize that in episodes 1, 2, 3, and 5, I believe, of season 2. And what's interesting, the reason to, you know, I had the personal experience, so I thought, okay, well, this is an interesting element. The other thing that was interesting is that, you know, the people in Grief Share who have lost a loved one, it wasn't necessarily through the slow train that hospice can be, where you're usually, you know, often dying of an illness, dying of cancer, dying of some sort of slow thing, where you do have the time to go, gosh, I really need to go to hospice and ask mom for an apology, or I need to go to hospice and make dad apologize to me if I can, whatever it is, right? So in the Grief Share case, you deal with people that die in accidents, and suddenly there's drug overdose stories, there's car crashes, there's, you know, plane wrecks, there's all sorts of things. So the sudden loss of the person where you don't get the benefit of all the things that we've been dramatizing in going home. So it was important to sort of add a place there for people who have lost loved ones, but suddenly, where they didn't have a chance. And now what are they supposed to do? They don't get to have those conversations. So that was why it was kind of important to, in season two, to flesh out the breadth of going home a little bit for people dealing with all kinds of different flavors of grief. And the Grief Share project was super helpful with us. They had a couple of their curriculum experts come out to set to help us, you know, make sure that we were kind of representing what you will see when you go to Grief Share. And they're wonderful people, and it's a great organization that's just super helpful. And that's one of the things. We tried really hard to make an entertaining show, but above all, we wanted it to be honest. And at the end of the day, I hope it can be helpful to people. It's not just here's an hour of TV. It's like, hopefully it's like, here's some people who understand what it is to lose loved ones, because we all do, and you're not alone. And there's some interesting and truthful tidbits through the Grief Share segments. And if nothing else, it points you to Grief Share kind of as a resource, where you can just, you know, griefshare.com and go check it out and see if it's something that might be helpful for you. And I was fully impressed with it, and the fact that they've just put in their 10,000 hours, as they say, to know here's how to do this, so it's really effective and really helpful for people. So hats off to Grief Share, and we're so happy that they trusted us enough to participate with us in this show. I cold called the president, Sam Hodges, and said, hey, I'm this guy and I'm doing this thing. And he's like, well, what do you want? I go, I just want you to say yes and help me do it right. And so he was super cool and trusted us and, you know, became friends. And they've just got an excellent, the Grief Share program is just excellent. And I'm very happy that it's part of the going home storyline in season two.
And we will repeat the website with griefshare.com at the end of our interview in a few minutes. So if you just came in late, we will make sure you get that website so that you can use it if you need to. The other thing is that there is a soundtrack of original songs, including the theme song from your series, that's coming out later this month. And I understand it's a bit of a family affair.
A bit, yes. No, my youngest son is a musician. He goes under the banner Merchant. Is his artist name, and he released a solo album last year that he produced with Duran Duran's John Taylor. So that's a pretty good partner to have on your first record. And he has created a bunch of songs specific for our show. He'll look at scenes and create these different songs. And I'm a big music guy, so having a resource in the family who can crank out some really heartfelt, beautiful songs. You know, my wife, Kara, who writes and produces on the show, likens the songs to being an additional character in a scene. And it can really can help push the emotion. Nate did a bunch of songs of his own. Nate and the composer of the series, Stephen Phillips, collaborated on several more. And Stephen does a fantastic job with his really evocative, really emotive score. And then we were lucky enough to bring in a guy named Aaron Morgan, who used to front a band called Seabird, and he does the theme song, The Way Home, that you hear at the top of every Going Home episode. So we've got a kind of a murderer's row of some pretty tremendous creative talents that all kind of come at it from a different angle. But I just love having original songs that bring these scenes to life, and there may be a way that you can kind of ruminate through the episodes after the fact by listening to the music that's created for it. And they work, they amplify the scenes in a beautiful way, but they stand alone as just gorgeous, lush songs too. Madison Gate Records is releasing it. It'll be out on, you know, wherever you stream music. It's a digital release this Friday, the 12th of January. You should have it in your iTunes or your Spotify or wherever you listen to music.
And what we'll do, Dan, is we will talk to the publicist at Pure Fix about possibly maybe offering it as a classic trivia prize for an upcoming contest. So we'll get into conversation
cool.
about that. The early reaction to the first episode, both from PureFlix and from viewers, is it just that a third season is coming up, and or are there any things you're working on as well?
You know, it's a good question. We're just coming off the writer's strike, so we were lucky to just miss the writer's strike with Going Home. So you know, the writer's strike plus starting into the new year is a bit of a ramp up for whatever's next. But we're certainly hopeful that that a season three is on the horizon. And there's just, it's kind of endless, the amounts of stories that you can tell. And, you know, they're as different as each person that walks through the front door of hospice. You know, the whole life that somebody has brought to that moment where they're reaching the end is really dramatic. And it's a great format to be able to explore different kinds of characters, different kinds of conflicts, different kinds of healing, different kinds of reconciliation and forgiveness and grace. And those are the stories that that are really, I think, beautiful and powerful. And I think they're the kind that, that hit an audience, whether they know exactly why that show was so good or so moving or what made them cry. I think that that at the heart of it is human connection is at the heart of the best stories of any of them. And for Going Home, that's what we really focus on and lean into. And we're just so blessed to have such amazing amazing talent, amazing actors that, that really can embody this variety of people and bring it to life for us. It's a thrill to be part of the show.
Episode 1 of Going Home, currently playing on Great American PureFlix. That's the subscription service available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Majority owned now by Great American Family, with Sony retaining a minority equity stake in the service. Episode 2 premieres this Friday, that's January 12th. Also, the original soundtrack also premiering on that day. For more details about the series online, go to www.pureflix.com. That's www.pureflix.com. And for more details about GriefShare and the great work that they do, go to griefshare.com. That's griefshare.com. And again, we will talk with the publicist of the series and PureFlix about having that original soundtrack as a future Classic Trivia Question prize. Dan Merchant, the creator and showrunner of Going Home, thanks again for joining us. Congratulations on Season 2 and hopefully many, many more to come. It's been great having you back.
Thanks, Simon. Always a pleasure. We'll see you for Season 3.
Absolutely. Take care. Enjoy the week ahead.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Dan Merchant, creator and showrunner of Going Home, joining us live from Portland, Oregon. Before the top of the hour, let's bring you our Classic Trivia Question of the Week, second week that we are running it. It's our first question of 2024. We have 7 prizes in play, including the American Express 2024 Pocket Calendar. It fits in your pocket, coat, jacket, et cetera, et cetera. And that, plus 2 wonderful CDs, Chicago's Greatest Hits, Lifetime Women in Rock, 2 great books. Jeff Melvoin, speaking of Northern Exposure, he's a writer and showrunner on that, running the show TV from the Inside, and Apocalypse Television from USC Professor David Craig about that famous movie that celebrates 40th anniversary after its ABC presentation in the 1980s. Both David and Jeff Melvoin were on our show last fall. All that and more can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? We're looking for the character's name of The Millionaire, that popular series, semi-anthology show. It ran from 1955 to 1960 on CBS. You can catch episodes on YouTube. Marvin Milner played Michael Anthony, the executive secretary to The Millionaire. We want the character's name. Who is The Millionaire on The Millionaire? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first to answer, you win. If you are a previous guest or a previous winner, you are not eligible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, Monday, we'll post the question tomorrow, Tuesday morning, on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT, that's at UBC Simon, on X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. If you listen to us on podcast, get in the game, because, yes, you could be that winner. So once again, the question, who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name and your mailing address, so if you win, we get the prize out to you as soon as possible. And once again, if we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. I usually post the question early tomorrow morning. So make sure you get in the game, because in order to win, as we like to say around here, you got to be in. Do so, and all the very best. When we come back, news note quickies. A further thought about the Golden Globe Awards, given the presentation. There was a lot to be desired. It may have been the worst Golden Globes and maybe the worst award show in a very long time, and not just because of the opening monologue. And we'll have a comment about a development that took place last week that didn't get a lot of attention. We want to give it attention because it could very well have a big role in terms of how you watch advertising going forward through smart TV sets and smart TV devices and the services and bundles that run through them. All that after we pause after the top of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. Spreaker.com and TuneIn.com. Together, reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Successful women always listen to Successful Women Radio. Next episode, tomorrow at noon, Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Catch Successful Women Radio. Great radio coming your way every weekday, Monday to Friday on BTR. That's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best we charge 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, the 8th of January, 2024. And both of those of you just joining us after the top of the hour. Simon Abbaum here with you along for the ride. Great to have you with us on a Monday afternoon, 42 degrees at the top of the hour. And we still want to hear from you about the world of television. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, you can always use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our final half hour today is brought to you by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating. And we will start this part of the program with the latest News Note Quickies. The cameras are rolling on the fifth and final season of Stranger Things. Netflix expected to premiere the final season this fall or 2025. More than 2.5 million people watched the Golden Bachelor's live two-hour wedding ceremony on ABC last week. Peabody-winning comedy series Sort Of begins its final season on Max January 18th. SportsCenter and Sports Event host Kevin Nagandi will continue at ESPN under a new multi-year contract extension. Terms were not released. And according to Sports Business Journal, 93 of the top 100 most watched individual programs last year were, get that drum roll going, National Football League games. Of course, the number one, the Super Bowl, seen by over 116 million people. And that is News Notes for today. In the 1960s, a comedian came of age named Rodney Dangerfield. And Rodney Dangerfield, like most good comedians that grew up in the 50s and 60s and got their fame and fortune then and in future decades, had an attitude. He had a special, special twinkle to what he did. Because when he did his routines, which were always very funny, starting with the Ed Sullivan Show, the number one variety show at the time, on Sunday nights, 8 o'clock on CBS, he would always patter his routines with the lines, I don't get no respect, no respect at all. And then he'd say a joke and a few more jokes. Laughter, laughter, laughter. Well, I don't get respect. And he'd sort of twizzle on his tie, check it out a little bit, shake it here and there. Like, I don't get no respect, no respect at all. And, of course, Rodney Dangerfield went on to a sensational career as a stand-up comedian. He later became a film star in movies like that, Back to School and Caddyshack. He also ran his own nightclub, Dangerfield, for quite some time here in New York and elsewhere around the country. Well, I think of Rodney Dangerfield today after last night's Golden Globe Awards on CBS. If the Golden Globes wanted to reestablish themselves as a legitimate award show, they did a pretty bad job of it last night. It was abysmal. And it was abysmal right from the start, thanks to maybe the most atrocious monologue that has happened in a long time on an award show from a comedian named Joe Coy. Now, I must insert something here about why this is so abysmal. Because this event last night is the latest example of why most television award shows have gone down and down and down in viewership over particularly the last decade. Because something is missing with these shows, and that is relatability with the home audience. Or as Rodney Dangerfield might say, the home audience doesn't get no respect from the Golden Globes and the Oscars and the Emmys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why? Because for the home audience, for viewers like you and me, there's two goals that an award show should go for. One is to honor the art, whether the art is television, movies, theater, music, et cetera, et cetera. The other, and it's very important, is to encourage people to sample the art, to encourage people to engage in the art, to encourage people to enjoy the art, get them interested, get them into a movie theater, watch these particular television shows, catch the latest movies or Broadway or off-Broadway plays and so on. And it seems that more and more and more and more, these award shows are more focused on the people in the theater rather than the people they're supposed to reach, you and me, the home audience. I will bet you, this is a commentary here, I will bet you that nobody at home is interested in inside baseball jokes that fly over the head, that is interested in political posturing, and interested in celebrities acting stupid. And that's exactly what happened, again, last night on CBS with the Golden Globe Awards. I'm going to step out on a limb and say the following. No one at home gives a hoot about a person's private parts. Nobody gives a hoot about Ozempic. Nobody gives a hoot about what political organization or belief a celebrity stands for. Nobody. They want to know about the shows, the TV shows, and the movies that are up for these awards. And they want to see people accept these awards in a graceful, respectful, dignified manner. And guess what? Joe Coy, in his opening monologue, and people that followed him on the show did not do that. They did the opposite. And they made you feel about watching. I will bet you that that sets were turned off immediately after that monologue. In fact, it got so bad in the theater that they were telling Joe Coy to shut up. When was the last time you saw that in an award show? By the way, Coy was appearing this afternoon, a few hours before we went on the air, on Good Morning America's Afternoon Hour on ABC. And he sort of gave, well, I misread the room. This is what basically he said. I did not see the episode, so preparing for today's show. But basically, wanting to stand from reports in the Hollywood Reporter and Variety, I misread the room. I only had 10 days to write the jokes, along with the writing and so forth. That's excuse making. I'm sorry. That's excuse. There's no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse. Again, the room you should have worked on was the living room of people watching the program, not just the room of the people in the audience at that Los Angeles theater, which, by the way, was gorgeous. And very intimate and wonderful. The lighting and the set design was sensational. How could you do this? What are people thinking? And I'm talking about the producers. What are people thinking? What is the new people behind the Golden Globes thinking? You are trying to get your reputation back, as a familiar political figure once said. Well, you didn't do a good job of it yesterday. And I'm sorry, Joy. I understand you're a very good comedian. And I'll give him credit for that. And just going up and say, you know what? I screwed up. I screwed up. I misread the audience at home. I apologize to them. I apologize to CBS. I apologize to Golden Globes. And the Golden Globes should apologize to CBS also, because I got news for you. I think if the viewership comes out the way I think it is, and remember, it was up against Sunday Night Football, a big game and a thrilling game between the Bills and the Dolphins. Dolphins won it, by the way, 21-14 at the end. You can count that CBS will not run this show again. In fact, you may have seen the last Golden Globes on broadcast television ever. It may very well end up, if it happens next year, on Netflix or someplace else that you have to use a smart TV set or device to watch. It was that bad. And again, people do not want to see celebrities acting stupid, whether it was the dopey banner, whether it was like fidgeting around, didn't know where they were at, et cetera, et cetera. They want to be related to. They want respect. And one of the few people, by the way, that gave them respect was Lily Gladstone, the supporting actress who won in the movie for Killer of the Flower Moon. She's probably now the lead, possibility of being the lead runner in that category, the front runner in that category for the Oscars. Her speech was sensational. It did what everybody should have done that night, which is to address the home audience, not just the audience in the theater. Same thing with Steven Yeun, by the way, who won for Beef, the best actor in a miniseries. There were some good moments like that, and they were drowned out by all the bad, stupid, atrocious moments. And it really is a shame. I was pulling for the Golden Globes to come back. They had new management, including Penske Media, which runs Deadline Hollywood Daily and Variety, two of the best news sources around in terms of entertainment news. Really disappointing. Really, really disappointing. And again, it's not all Joe Coy. This is on the producers. This is on the organization. This is on the performers. They don't get it. Well, it's time for them to get it, because if they don't get it soon, there's going to be so much disrespect among the home viewer, they will be turning off for good. And some already are. So Emmy Award people, next Monday night on Fox, Oscar people, in a few months on ABC, take note. This may be you. If you don't get your act together and make a show that relates not just to the people you see in front of you in a theater in Los Angeles, but to the people at home, no matter whether in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, someplace in North Dakota, or the Rocky Mountains, or the Southwest, or the Southeast, that's the audience that wants to hear you. That's the audience that you should be respecting. That's the audience you don't screw around with. And maybe, just maybe, you might see your ratings go up. Sadly, that's the lesson that the Golden Globes did not learn last night on CBS. In a moment, a comment about a development that took place last week that you all should know about, because it might just impact the kind of advertising you see on services through your smart set or smart device. More about the Group M Ad Innovation Accelerator after this message from Liquid IV. Have you heard about the new wellness routine that's easy to take, keeps you in a graded shape as well? That is Liquid IV. It's a great-tasting drink mix in stick form that, when you add with water, delivers hydration to your body faster and more efficiently than water alone. What's more, you get five essential vitamins, B3, 5, 6, 12, and vitamin C, plus three times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. There's 12 flavors of drink, all delicious and refreshing, like Concord Grape, Passion Fruit, and Watermelon. And there's also a line now of sugar-free Liquid IV drinks, like flavors like Green Grape and Peach. And they're all delicious, they're all refreshing, and it's all gluten, dairy, and soy-free. So all you got to do to enjoy, starting now, is go to liquidiv.com. It's liquidiv.com to order. You get 20% off with the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop for better hydration today. Just use the promo code TELEVISE, T-L-E-V-I-S-E-D, at liquidiv.com. Remember, Liquid IV is fueling life's adventures with real hydrating. Last week, Group M, one of the leading ad agencies in the world, announced a very unique venture, a venture that very well could, for the greater, impact the kind of advertising you see on television. I know a lot of people complain about advertising, particularly on broadcast and cable television, because in each hour, no matter what time of the day you watch, daytime, primetime, overnight, there's far too many ad breaks in an hour and far too many ads in the break. I'm seeing sports events now, including college and pro football games, where a timeout that decades ago would last a minute, tops 3, 4, 5 minutes. Amazing. And frankly, a turnoff. In fact, what now is the case is that most television programs, broadcast and cable, now have any time of the day between 18 and 20 minutes of advertising and promos. And on some programs, it's even as high, really want a shocker, folks, 23 minutes of ads. That's more than a third of the program each hour, more than a third of each hour. It's wild. Well, Group M is trying to do something about it. So last week, they launched a venture called the Ad Innovator Accelerator. And the whole idea of this venture is to go after new advertising formats, more interactive, shoppable, other ways to present commercials beyond the 30 or 60-second spot. And we should point out that most services that you get on your smart TV set or smart devices or multi-channel bundles, it's basically 3 to 5 minutes of ads an hour, and no ad break lasts longer than 60 or 90 seconds. Well, this first-to-market program, as they call it, is all about, as they say in the press release, redefining engagement between advertisers and audiences. Among the backers, Disney, NBC Universal, Roku, Telly, the super smart TV set trying to be the iPhone of television, and YouTube. And they will be part of this accelerator right from the get-go. So this accelerator, which is going to start in the next few weeks, has a couple of goals in mind. Let me give it to you. One is to set recurring innovation sessions and quarterly meetings to establish goals and determine outputs for newly created advertising models, formats, and methods. To launch pilot programs this quarter, between now and the end of March. Co-create advertising formats for agnostic use across the media ecosystem using test and learn findings. Analyze efficiency and efficacy of media campaigns using newly implemented standards and practices. So those are the four goals of this group. And incidentally, this group is open to other players beyond their charter membership. And here's what Brightline, another member, by the way, of this group, Robert Ackman, their president, had to say about this project. And I quote, "Consumers expect more from brands at every touch point, and the living room is no different. This collaboration accelerates the innovation feedback loop with Group M clients to ensure tomorrow's TV ad experiences align with both viewer expectations and advertiser needs." Here's another quote from Roku's Christina Shepherd. She's the Vice President of Global Ad Sales and Partnerships. "As TV viewing continues to shift to streaming, Roku strives to create a better TV experience overall for consumers and advertisers alike. We're energized by Group M's commitment and look forward to driving outcomes alongside some of the most innovative media and tech firms in the industry." And Ilya Posen, the head of Telly, had this to say. Again, I quote, "Television needs to evolve into the platform where brand awareness meets performance, transcending the traditional 30-second ad. At Telly, we've reinvented the television, delivering incredible new ways to reach and engage consumers on the bigger screen, or the biggest screen in the home, and we're excited to partner with Group M to continue reimagining the future of advertising together." It's shocking that this accelerator project did not get the attention it should have garnered last week. I hope in the weeks to come it will. I am sure that Group M, when they go to the Upfront Newfront events, will have a lot to say about this. And hopefully by that time, we're talking March, April, May, they'll have some formats to showcase and maybe even implement on a smart TV directed service near you. And we, of course, will keep you posted about the accelerator and where it's at. And if you want to know more details, go to groupm.com. That is Group M, www.groupm.com. Again, I want to thank all of our guests for being here today and all of you for tuning in and kicking off your second week of 2024 with us, the promo about TV's current and future. We have two more shows coming your way. On Wednesday, we'll bring you as our lead guests Paul Epstein and Rib Hellas. They are the executive producer and star, respectively, of the new INSP Western series, The Tall Tales of Jim Burgess. It begins on Thursday. The Tall Tales of Jim Bridger. That's The Tall Tales. That is a real, I'll tell you. What a tongue twist. The Tall Tales of Jim Bridger. Paul Epstein, the executive producer. Rib Hellas, he is the star, and they'll both be with us. And on Friday, we'll find out about an interesting company that's syndicating original shows to smart TV services and multi-channel bundles. It's called Binge Networks, and Bonnie Britterer will be with us. She is the founder and owner of that company. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, check us out on our website 24/7, tomorrowbetelevised.com. It's tomorrowbetelevised.com. Latest episode on the home screen. If you want to comment on the program, use the chat section at the bottom of the screen, and if we use your chat on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. And we love hearing from you. And don't forget, we're also available on podcast 24/7 on the iRadio Podcast Network, Acast, Odyssey. Yes, Odyssey, by the way, is still in business. I know you may have heard the rumor, the reports that Odyssey has filed for chapter 11 bankruptcy. They are going to stay in operation while they do the restructuring. So we're still going to be on Odyssey, plus Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Luminary, Fathom, Zencaster, and many, many more. So tune us in then and make us a regular habit if you can. And if so, make us a regular habit live so you can phone in and chat room in as well. We love hearing from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. I respond to you within 24 hours. Remember, that's the email you use for our classic trivia question. One more time, the question right now, who is the millionaire on The Millionaire? Seven prize in play if you're first emailing the correct answer. And remember, again, whatever you say, we respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not, say, those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toews, BTR's general manager, Jay Sonnenberg, is head of content. Websites are provided by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitarist Bakus is our web coordinator. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating, and by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. Remember, use the promo code TELEVISED in both cases to get a discount off your order at checkout. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. We are back with you on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune and Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Don't forget to catch me Wednesday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, on Sports Newswire on the Sports Grid Network. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And once more time, let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with you. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.